and you're listening to 91.7 FM WHU Astores. I am Fran Storch. Welcome to Radio Naturopath. This is a show where we talk about natural medicine, and for the next hour, you will hear a lot of great information about natural medicine. So we have a bunch of cool things to talk to. If you would like to write to us at radionaturopath at gmail.com. You can write in and ask a question. You can also call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. So I have a bunch of things that I wanted to talk about today. Let's see. Let me just get over here. Last week, we've been talking about various foods that are good for you. And there are a couple. So there were a couple that I still wanted to throw out to you. For example, there's two nuts that I wanted to talk to you about. One of them is why walnuts are good for you. So walnuts are a terrific nut. What's interesting about them, walnuts are kind of cool because they fill that doctrine of signatures thing. The doctrine of signatures being that something that makes people who are anti-natural medicine very, very angry, and makes it so that they want to it's another reason for them to not be interested in natural medicine. But we think it's a cute thing, and it's that and it's not super science-y, but it's kind of a cool thing, and that's that When you look at a plant, or you look at a fruit, or look at something that comes from the earth, it has a certain shape to it. And if you look at walnuts, they kind of look like a brain. And so the idea there is that the wonderful monounsaturated fatty acids in walnuts are really good for your brain. And so monounsaturated fatty acids are good for a lot of things, but it is one of the fats that will help with you fathead. And I'm not calling you fathead as an insult. I am calling you a fathead because you are, in fact, a fathead, meaning that you have lots of fat in your head. And the more fat you have in your head, the better it is, as long as it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is protecting as the linings and coverings of all of the neurons, the nerve cells inside your brain. So getting good quality monounsaturated fatty acids is part of that. And you can get those from walnuts. You can get them from olives and avocados, and you can get them from raw organic cocoa, whether it's powdered or in nibs or in cocoa beans. You can get them in olive oil, and nuts in general. Nuts in general are going to have monounsaturated fatty acids, so they tend to be good for you as long as you don't have a reason why you can't eat nuts. Walnuts have a lot of good fats. Like we said, they also have monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats, and they also have alpha-linolenic acid in them, which you can convert if you have a well-functioning delta-60 saturase enzyme. You can convert them to active omega-3 fatty acids, which, once again, you can use for your brain. You can also use to reduce inflammation. They also contain a bunch of minerals. They have calcium, zinc, iron, selenium, vitamin E, and they have some B vitamins. The omega-3s reduce oxidative stress in the brain, and they also help to improve signaling in your brain. So your brain's going to work better if you eat more nuts and you have more essential fatty acids on board. Also helps you to build more nerve cells because, as I said, it's a building block for your nerve cells. All of your cell membranes have a lot of fat in them. They also have folate. Folate is very important for your methylation. Yeah, I just spoke Greek. I know. Did I speak Greek or Latin? I might have been Latin. Okay, so methylation has to do. There's a big old pathway in your body where you have compounds like vitamin B12, B6, and folic acid that trade what we call methyl groups. And they're little groups in organic chemistry that are comprised of carbon and hydrogen, and they get passed around in chemical reactions. And as they're being passed around, they act as cofactors for terrific things like the production of neurotransmitters, at proteins, DNA, RNA, which are the building blocks of cells, and also detoxifying amino acids. And so when you have adequate folic acid on board, you're going to be able to methylate better. There's also ellagic acid. Ellagic acid is a great antioxidant that's helpful for cardiovascular health. Ellagic acid is also the main ingredient in pomegranates that helps them to be so wonderful for cardiovascular health. Walnuts are thought to help to boost your mood. So walnuts make you happy. Again, because of the omega-3 fatty acids, when you have adequate omega-3 fatty acids, your mood is going to be better. You're going to tend to have less depression and anxiety, and we definitely use omega-3 fatty acids to help with depression and anxiety. So as you could see, they look like little brains. It's really kind of funny, the Doctrine of Signatures.
Brains?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'm talking about, the Doctrine of Signatures. It looks like the thing that it helps. Like apples are good for your heart, so they're shaped like a heart. So are, hawthorn berries, and blueberries are good for your veins, and so are blackberries, and, dandelions are good for your urinary system. They're kind of yellow, stuff like that. And Oregon grapefruit and golden seal, they taste like bile, and they look like bile, and they're, in fact, good for your liver and your biliary system. So, nature plays a bunch of cool, fun tricks like that. Yeah, so I don't know if kidney beans are good for your kidneys, but yellow peas definitely are. That one's really funny. Yellow pea protein is really good for your kidneys. It just is, okay? All right. So we want to know if walnuts can help with weight loss. Oh, boy, nuts and weight loss. So it's supposedly – so nuts, you think of nuts as being very high in essential fatty acids – and fiber. And so in that sense, they are going to help with fat loss because of the amount of fiber. And so the thing is, remember, when you're talking about the calories in an item, a calorie in a food item is not that as soon as you put it in your mouth, it's going to have exactly that many calories in your body, and it's going to provide this amount of energy, and if you don't use it, it's going to cause this amount of weight gain. Doesn't exactly work that way. If you have 100 calories of white sugar and 100 calories of walnut, they're going to behave very differently in your body. The sugar, you're going to pretty much use, you're going to use almost all of that sugar when you put that sugar into your body. When you take in walnuts, the thing is, walnuts are high in fiber. So even though they have a lot of fat, which is supposedly high in calories, you're not going to actually absorb all of that fat because the fiber is going to sweep a bunch of it out. Anything that's high in fiber tends to reduce the effective caloric load of that food. And so you can eat a lot more calories of walnuts and the effect. So the effective calories are going to be lower than if you ate pure white sugar. That's kind of how that works. So if you were to eat walnuts isocalorically instead of sugar, the walnuts are going to be more of a fat loss food, whereas the white sugar, of course, is not going to be so easy. And then the point there is that when you're talking about the caloric content in a food, you've probably heard me say this before, but when you talk about 100 calories of sugar versus 100 calories of walnut, those 100 calories are the amount of energy that it takes to burn a certain amount of that food to ash. And so it takes 100 calories to burn so many walnuts to ash. That's what the caloric content is. How that food effectively works in your body is not the same. So the caloric load is actually going to be different. And that's something that's much harder to measure. It's very easy to throw walnuts in a test tube and burn them. But to see how they function for real in your body, that's a lot harder to gauge. And the other thing is there's biochemical individuality, that one person will digest and absorb walnuts differently than another. Some people are more efficient at using their food, and some people are less efficient. And the people who are less efficient at using their food and have a faster digestive turnover are not going to gain as much weight as the people who are more efficient. So if you're somebody who struggles with losing weight, just remember that in times of a famine, your skinny brothers and sisters you might not be seeing much of them anymore.
I resemble that comment.
I know. So, well, that's why you see most people have weight issues. That's how we were designed. If you were designed to not hold on to weight, that is not a survival advantage. It's a survival advantage in a society where we have an excessive amount of high-calorie, easily accessible food that causes us to gain excess weight, and then we have all of the health problems from gaining excess weight. So it's a survival advantage in that environment. But in an environment where we were originally plopped down on the earth, or however we came to be on the earth, it's not a survival advantage. You want to have an efficient digestive system that effectively takes on nutrients, and you're able to store more. If you're in a paleo society where food is scarce, people who are thin and have high metabolisms are in danger. So that's why there are more of us than there are of you, because we have a survival advantage. He just stuck his tongue out at me.
It's a radio thing.
Yeah, right. That's the way it is. So if you're being hard on yourself because you're overweight, just realize, yes, you can go ahead and eat healthier and lose some weight if you want to, but just realize if we were in a famine, you're going to survive longer than people who are slender. So getting back to walnuts. If you don't have a problem eating nuts, you can eat walnuts, and walnuts are another kind of nut that you may want to soak, because you're still going to have the issue in that they have lectins in them. You can soak them and then dry them, and then you're going to get rid of some of the lectins. You're going to get some of the oxalic acid or the phytic acid, so that you don't have these things binding up your minerals. So that can be an issue.
So earlier you had made a mention about kidney beans in your kidneys.
Yeah.
I found something if you want me to share it.
All right.
Okay, this is from Livestrong, livestrong.com. Mm-hmm. Are kidney beans healthy for your kidneys? And similar to the kidney in shape and color, kidney beans provide about a variety of minerals and vitamins, so they're generally beneficial to your health. If your kidneys are healthy, kidney beans can be, when consumed as part of a balanced diet, contribute to your kidney health. If your kidneys are diseased, you might need to moderate your intake of kidney beans.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Why?
And I sent you this over. It's in your email, too, so you can take a look at this. They perform a decidedly unglamorous job of eliminating excess waste and water from your blood, producing urine in the process. Your kidneys filter toxins and drugs out of your bloodstream, blah, 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 blah. Goes down there. So foods for kidney health. Kidney bean benefits. They provide many of the nutritional qualities that promote kidney health. They contain lots of soluble and insoluble fiber and are low in fat, which enhances cardiovascular health and keeps your blood pressure low. The high fiber in kidney beans also helps to stabilize your blood sugar. Kidney beans are low in sodium, sugar, and cholesterol, and they're an excellent source of low-fat protein.
Yeah.
So, anyway, and there's more there, too.
Because fat is bad.
Well, not necessarily.
Right.
Right.
So that article is a little old school. It's a little, or should I say, medium school. It's like right. Low in cholesterol and fat. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and you're not in that camp anymore.
No.
No.
Not anymore?
Anymore.
Jeez.
Ever. Ever.
I mean, since school. For 20 years.
Since learning how the body really works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole carb versus fat thing, it came to be because it goes back to Ansel Adams. No, that the guy who did the cholesterol study. Ansel Keys. Yes, it goes back to Ansel Keys. And Ansel Keys did all the cholesterol studies, and he was the proponent of the cholesterol theory of cardiovascular disease. And I want to get a t-shirt that says Ansel Keys was wrong. I don't know if he was 100% wrong, but he was. But when they did the heart studies, they found that they found conflicting results, and they saw that there was more cardiovascular disease in certain countries than others, and they attributed it to fat consumption instead of carbohydrate consumption. And we know today that eating healthy fats is actually very good for you. And not only that, of three macronutrients, fat, protein, and carbohydrates, fat has the least impact on your insulin. The problem is that fat needs to not be oxidized. When you eat fat that's hydrogenated or oxidized, then it will cause cardiovascular problems and other problems. So when you're eating your, when you eat deep fried things or you eat chips, and even if they come from the health food store, if they're deep fried, and anything that's deep fried or any fat that's been heated at high heat is going to have some breakdown and hydrogenation to it. And so when you get free radical damage, your body tries to incorporate those fats into your body, it can cause damage to the cells in your body. When you eat fats that are not damaged, then they're very good for you. They don't raise your, and you don't have really much of an insulin response to fat. And that's why people go on ketogenic diets, where they eat a higher fat diet and it doesn't stimulate their insulin. And when you can keep your insulin low, you're able to lose fat more readily. Carbohydrates and starches and sugar raise your insulin the most of all of the macronutrients, followed by protein. Protein doesn't raise it nearly as much as carbohydrates do, but it does. You need protein to raise your insulin in order for your body to incorporate protein into all of the places in your body that it needs, into your organs and tissues, and to make enzymes. But certainly to build muscle, and to build muscle and to put it into your organs, you need insulin around. Insulin will drive amino acids to build proteins in your protein tissues. So you can't have no insulin. You need some insulin. Mm-hmm. It's a better way to say that. But fat, interestingly, so that's why people go on ketogenic diets when they have a difficult time losing fat. And a lot of people do well. If you're someone who has really stubborn fat, a ketogenic diet might work for you in that. If you eat fat as your highest macronutrient calorically, then you're going to stimulate your insulin the least amount. And that's how you do that. So I'm not saying that everybody should go on a ketogenic diet. It's kind of interesting. And one of the things that I hear is people go on these ketogenic diets and they don't measure their ketones. So I'm like, that's interesting. What's the point? So what does that even mean when you're talking about
it? Yeah, what does that mean?
So what it means is that what your body preferentially burns carbohydrate as its first fuel source. If there's little to no carbohydrate around, then it will start burning fat as a fuel. And when you're primarily burning fat as a fuel, you will you'll break that fat down. And one of the breakdown products is ketones. So ketones are they're just a biochemical entity. Your body can use ketones for energy too. Now, people who are diabetic, when their insulin is too high and their carbohydrates are too low, they can get into something dangerous called diabetic ketoacidosis. And that's not what this is. It's just that you want to be in ketosis. You want to see some level of ketones in your urine. And back in the days of Atkins was the first guy who was well known to promote a ketogenic diet. He had you using keto sticks. They were just sticks that have a panel on them that changes color in the presence of ketones. And you could check your urine to see if you were throwing off ketones. And people don't do that now. There's no key. People don't buy people. I don't know if nobody does it, but most people don't. Once in a while, if I have a patient who's on a ketogenic diet, I'll do a urinalysis on them and we'll see if they're throwing off ketones. I also had a patient on a ketogenic diet and I did a blood level. You can do a blood level of acetoacetate, and it wasn't elevated. And probably if it was in her blood, that would be a bad thing. But I did look at her urine, and her urine, she did have 1+ ketones. Mind you, I will see if a patient comes in and they haven't eaten or they haven't eaten very much that day, whether or not they're on a ketogenic diet, I'll do a urine dip, and it'll come up slightly positive for ketones. Because overnight, if you haven't been eating, you know, your body doesn't have any carbohydrates to run after. It has little, you know, not so much carbohydrates, and it's going to burn some fat for fuel, and then you'll throw off some ketones, and it's okay. And if you're not in diabetic ketoacidosis and you're throwing off ketones, it's not a big deal. Of course, when you're on that ketogenic diet, ketones smell. They have a weird, fruity, and sometimes unpleasant odor. and well, people will get ketone breath. And so it doesn't smell good. Yeah. So
ketones occur from breakdown of fat in the liver. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. You
get acetone breath.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But when your body is producing insulin, the insulin prevents the fat cells from entering the bloodstream, so they stay stored in your body. Is that right? I'm reading a basics on ketones.
Yes, insulin. That's right. When you have a lot of insulin around, insulin promotes. Insulin is not a bad thing. Insulin is like a traffic director. What insulin does is first. I mean, we think of insulin as that stuff that people who are diabetic don't make. And so that people who have type 1 diabetes, they don't make it, so they have to take it. And people with type 2 diabetes, they make too much of it, and they become resistant to it. And so, but insulin, like I said, insulin is not a bad thing by any means. People who are trying to be in ketosis think of it as a bad thing because their insulin is hanging around. Keeping them in fat storage. So lowering their insulin or lowering their serum insulin, their fasting insulin, is a good plan. But insulin's job is to get stuff out of your blood. That's what it does. So when it sees carbohydrates in your blood, it will take those carbohydrates and drive it into your cells so you can have the carbohydrates in your cells so you could do stuff. Insulin also will... If you eat fat, you're going to the first thing your body's going to do is it's going to produce triglycerides. That happens in your liver when you absorb the fat, you absorb free fatty acids, and then it goes to your liver and gets converted into these packages called triglycerides, and they're going to run around your blood. So you can use those triglycerides for energy. If you don't use a lot of them, your body's going to look at them and go, too much triglycerides in here. We're going to go ahead. The insulin's going to say, okay, we're going to go send you to be stored as fat. And instead of being running around in the blood. So insulin's job is to get stuff out of your blood and direct it to where it needs to go ultimately. Cortisol, on the other hand, puts sugar into your blood. There are other hormones that put sugar into your blood that will raise your blood sugar, like glucagon and cortisol. They both do that. Whereas insulin takes it out of your blood. And so insulin will drive sugar into your cells for use. It will if the cells are resistant to insulin because there's too much sugar going in, then insulin will tell that sugar to get turned into fat, and then the fat will get turned into triglycerides. And then if the fat doesn't get used, the fat is going to wind up in the liver and or in your entire body and get stored. Insulin, when it sees protein and amino acids, it also drives the amino acids into your muscles and into your organs so that it can be turned into lean tissue. So it does all of those things. It, like I said, it's just a traffic director. And, you know, muscle builders, people who are bodybuilders, or if you're just like me and you want to build some muscle, you want to have some insulin around so that you can, in fact, build muscle. If you had no insulin or low insulin, you would not be able to do that. So you have to have some insulin around sometimes. And, in fact, bodybuilders need a balance of carbohydrate and protein because the carbohydrate will raise their insulin. The insulin will be around, and that will help them to build more muscle. So that's how you do that. However, if muscle builders want to get ripped, they drop their carbohydrates so that their body will be forced to use fat as a fuel. That's a trick that they use, especially when they're about to when they're about to compete. That they'll basically eat protein and vegetables, and that's all they'll eat, you know, so that they can burn extra fat. So that's an insulin way to go. It's an interesting way to go. And we got here from talking about eating fat and how eating fat is good for you. So if you're looking to decrease your insulin, there's a few ways to do it. One, as I said, is the ketogenic diet. Another is to increase your fat consumption and decrease your carbohydrate consumption. You don't necessarily need to be in a ketogenic diet in order to lose weight. There are ways to maximize your insulin function and minimize it when you don't want to. One that I like to talk about is intermittent fasting. So intermittent fasting will put you into, will help you to burn fat, and then you don't necessarily have to eat such a, you know, a ketogenic diet, where it's a ketogenic diet, essentially you're eating your highest proportion of food as fats, and then you're eating reasonable amounts of protein and vegetables, and you're eating a relatively low carbohydrate diet. So you're going to, the vegetables you're going to eat are going to be mostly non-starchy, and you eat at a level so that you're in ketosis, and that often means little to no fruit, and certainly no regular sugar, and so that's how people put themselves in ketosis. And some people have really stubborn fat when they go on a ketogenic diet. That's the only thing that works for them. And I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I'm in favor of anybody doing a diet that works for them, whatever that is, that makes you happy and healthy. And so happy means that sometimes maybe you're going to eat a brownie. Healthy means that most of the time you're going to eat good stuff. And I really like that idea that 90% of the time you're going to eat healthy and 10% of the time you eat what you want. Not everybody can do that because people are triggered by those foods. But again, if they only ate 10% of their calories from play foods, from fun foods, then they'd probably be all right.
You know?
So that's why I also like to promote intermittent fasting, because if you squeeze all of your eating into an 8-hour window. Now, again, intermittent fasting is not going to work for somebody like you, Ron.
Right.
Anybody who has a very high metabolism and is hungry all the time and doesn't have fat stores, it's not going to work. You're just not going to be able to do it. You're going to feel awful. But somebody like me, I don't really like to eat first thing in the morning. I like to wait until I'm actually hungry to eat. And that takes me quite a few hours. In fact, I can exercise in a fasted state. Mind you, I probably don't perform. Like, if I really needed to perform, I would eat something before I would perform. But if I'm just doing my workouts in the morning, I generally don't eat. And but that works for me.
I know it does. Doesn't work for me.
It works, and not only does it work for me, it works for most people.
I know.
You are unusual.
I am.
And you're unusual because being skinny and having a high metabolism is a survival disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And
well,
so
I'm not looking forward to any, you know, terrible
famine.
Things. Yeah, no famines, please.
Right.
Nope.
No, it is definitely a disadvantage. And so if you can exercise fasted first thing in the morning, by fasted, I don't mean no water. You should always be drinking fluids. And if you're going to exercise, you definitely should be drinking fluids. And if you're exercising hard enough that you're going to be sweating a lot and you need some electrolytes in your fluid, you should do that too. And so when I exercise fasted in the morning, if I'm going to be sweating a lot, even though I'm saying I'm exercising fasted, I have maybe a few calories in the bottle, because I will put a splash of coconut water, and then there's some calories in my electrolyte mix. So I'm exercising. I'm burning way more calories than are in my water bottle. So maybe there's 40 calories in my water bottle, and my workout is hundreds of calories. So I'm burning it off. It's a negligible amount of calories, but that works for me. Now, if I'm going to go on a long ride, or if I'm going to race, or if I'm going to perform, and it's in the morning, I'm going to be eating something before that. It's better for me to do that. If I get out on the club ride first thing in the morning because it starts too early in the morning and there's no way I can get some food in me before I get to that ride, then I carry food with me. And the thing is, I can't eat because my stomach is like, no, you're not eating now. Which is sad, because if I would eat, I'd probably perform better. But then when I finally get to the rest stop, I can eat, and then I perform better after the rest stop.
Right. The minute you start eating something, you just kind of, it's like your body wakes up.
Yeah, and I'm in a what do you call it? Negative split. I'm a negative split girl when it comes to long rides.
Start out slow, get faster later.
Yep. I can't. First thing, everybody, like, I don't know why that is, that the rides go out like a shot.
Anxious.
And
people are anxious.
And guys are in charge.
Oh, it's a guy thing, is it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, and here, let me explain why. It's kind of it's kind of a Venus and Mars thing. And the Venus and Mars thing applies to working out. Men do better because you have more muscle mass. Because you have more muscle mass, you have more creatine phosphokinase. You have more ATP because you have more muscle mass. So doing those short, hard bursts, going from 0 to 60 is easier in general. I mean, this is a generalization, of course, because if a woman is trained to do this, now you don't see, the people who sprint, the sprinters, when you see running races and you see sprinters, right? Mm-hmm. You don't see them just standing still and not doing anything at all before they do their sprint, do you?
Oh, no. They're doing all sorts of warm-up
drills.
They
warm up. And even when they're standing at the start block and they're smiling and waving at you, they're so cute. I don't know why that's a thing. They smile and wave at you.
Well, they're on camera. When is the opportunity to be on camera as a runner ever exist?
I know, but that's...
Whereas if you're a football player, you're on camera all the time. If you're a basketball player, you're on camera all the time.
No, I know, but it's a funny, cute thing among the sprinters. They always, they smile at you, they jump up and down, they wave at you. The distance runners don't do that.
No.
No, because they're more serious. But the sprinters are
serious.
They're serious. They're just happy.
They're only serious for a short period of time.
But and they're also they're also happier. They also it feels better to be a sprint. I mean, nothing against you if you're a marathon runner, but look at your marathon runner versus look at your sprinter. Look who looks healthy and vital, and who looks kind of thin and
emaciated.
That's
I know you didn't want
me
to use that word, but I was a marathon runner for a while. I looked emaciated. I'll admit it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just you run yourself close to death.
Well, you're spending all your time in high cortisol, and cortisol is a catabolic hormone. So if you're running for a long time. And so your body is going to consume anything it can. It's going to consume your fat, and it's going to consume everything, your fat, your carbohydrates, and your muscle. So that's why. But people who do sprints and do intervals, you're doing short bursts and then you're resting. You're doing short bursts and then you're resting. And so, Allison Felix, that's her name, Allison Felix, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And she's really buff and she looks really healthy. I think that's why they smile, because they're very vital. The more muscle mass you have within reason, the better you feel, because muscle mass is energizing. When you have lots of muscle cells, you have more cells, and those cells are built for activity when you have more skeletal muscles. So take heed, people. If you want to feel better and have more energy, one way to do that is to build muscle mass. And when you have more muscle cells, you have more of the good things that are in cells. You have more coenzyme Q10. You have more electron transport chains. Because you have more cells, and those cells are designed for activity, all of the things that are necessary for activity, you have more of that stuff in your body. You have more electron transport chains. You have more coenzyme Q10, which is an energizing nutrient, which runs your electron transport chain. You have more free fatty acids. And you have more cells that are ready to go at a moment's notice. It makes you feel good. When you actively attempt to grow muscle cells, you make more growth hormone, you make more testosterone, you make more of a bunch of anabolic hormones that build muscle, and they just make you feel good. When you have more testosterone in your body, you feel more energized, and you're going to build more tissue. You have more growth hormone, you have more DHEA, or hormones that they make you happy, they make you energized, they make you want to do stuff. They, quite frankly, DHEA and testosterone make you more aggressive. But, I mean, by being more aggressive, that doesn't necessarily mean violent. It just makes you want to do stuff more. Whereas excessive cardio activity, I can vouch for that, makes you tired.
So here we are from a study back, and this was written in December of 2017. Overweight people more likely to be happier than skinny ones. That's from a study that was done. And it says people who are overweight are more likely to be happy. Study has found carrying extra pounds is usually associated with a number of health risks, including heart conditions, diabetes, increased likelihood of suffering strokes. However, a new study has discovered that people who are classified as fat may lead happier lives. And this was a research from the International Journal of Epidemiology. And it was conducted by a group of scientists at the University of Bristol. I think this is an English publication here. But anyway, interesting, huh? People who have a higher BMI are more likely to have higher blood pressure, blah, blah, blah. But they also discovered that people who are overweight generally have a calmer state of mind.
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I think it is
because, well, I'll tell you in a minute. I have a phone.
Okay. So I think that probably depends on the person. I could extrapolate. I could make some guesses as to why. If you eat more food of any kind. Now, if you're eating a lot of food that's bad for you, and so if you're overweight and all of the food that you're eating that's bad for is bad for you,
yeah.
that's where this study is going to fail, because if you're eating food that's unhealthy for you, and you're not getting your essential fatty acids in, you're not getting your magnesium, you're not getting any healthful nutrients into you, you're not going to be happy, even though the study says the tendency is that you're going to be happy. But if you're an overweight person who eats a lot of food and a good proportion of that food is healthy, then just by virtue of eating more food, you're going to get more nutrients in. Also, people who are overweight, I guess it depends on the overweight person. It really does, because some overweight people malabsorb and some overweight people absorb very well. So the proportion of the people who are overweight and have good absorption, they're going to be absorbing their essential fats, their magnesium, their B vitamins, all the things that you need to be happy and healthy. So that's interesting. The other thing is if you're overweight, it's people who are slender, and again, gross generalization here. If you're slender and you're happy as clam, mazel tov. It's wonderful. We're talking a bit of science here, and we're talking generalizations. And I'm sure there are slender people who are very happy. But I'm just going to speculate here. So if you're slender, one of the reasons you may be slender is because of you're not as an efficient an absorber. And that's one reason why people who are slender, because they don't absorb their nutrients as efficiently. And we know that's one of the reasons why Ron is slender, because we know that he definitely has food intolerances, and he was for 50 years he ate a food intolerance until I told him to stop. And so that meant that his digestion and absorption developed in an environment where he was eating a food intolerance for all of those years. So that meant that his body evolved in such a way where I don't think he's ever going to get that back, because he spent 50 years eating gluten. And so that means his whole nervous system, his organs, his digestive system all developed in that environment. So there's going to be a level of inefficiency. And it's not like, you know, when he stopped eating gluten, he gained a lot of weight, gained a little bit of weight at first, and then he lost it. And, you know, if he exercises a lot, he still runs at a relatively low weight. And so that's one thing. The other thing is that people who are slender, there's been interesting studies. There's this, there's a receptor called lipoprotein lipase. Lipoprotein lipase, is an enzyme that it breaks down. There's receptors for it on various tissues in your body, and it's an enzyme that helps you to break down and use fat. So people who are at heavier weights have a lot of lipoprotein lipase receptors on their fat cells. So if they're on your fat cells are going to break down the lipids that you take in, and then they're going to be inserted into the fat. Mm-hmm. If you have few lipoprotein lipase receptors on your fat cells and most of them on your muscle cells, when your body sees fats, it's going to take those fats and it's going to inject them into the muscles, and you're going to have a lot more energy, and you're not going to be storing your fats as fat. You're going to be using them as energy. And so one reason that some people are slender is because they move a lot. I'll see people who come in and they're slender. I'm like, what do you do for exercise? Well, sometimes I walk, but I'm stressed and I haven't been getting out to get my exercise. Do you belong to a gym? No. Or I had a gym membership, but I don't go. And I look at them and they're a healthy weight, or they're slender. What you often see with people who are slender, who aren't doing a particular amount of exercise, you can observe them and see how much they move. If you look at me and Ron lying at night in bed relaxing, What you're going to see is me being very still and Ron twitching all the time. And, you know, he has twitchy legs, he's twitchy arms, he doesn't sit still. And one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, he's kind of, if I wake up and I observe him, he's kind of a restless sleeper. He just moves a lot. And I think that even when he's sitting still, he's moving a lot. And so if you were to calculate how many movements he makes per day, he probably outdoes me by a lot. And that's because his nervous system is not calm. And that just may be how he's wired. And it may also be, once again, because he spent his life, 50 years, eating gluten, which was very bad for him. And so his nervous system did not develop as efficiently as it might have. And so he struggles to keep himself calm. And this may be again something that people who are slender struggle with. If they have an absorption issue, or they're just wired to if they don't absorb well, if they don't get their essential fatty acids in, or their magnesium or B vitamins, things that you need to keep your body calm, you're going to tend to move around a lot more. And then some people just are healthy and they're just wired to move around a lot more. And when they do that, even if they're not effective, even if they're not like going for a workout or slopping the hogs or feeding the horses or whatever they're doing, just in the course of the day, they're going to be moving around a lot more. Like my, when I was a baby, my mother told me that the doctors looked at me and said that I was hypotonic, that I didn't move a lot. And I need a lot of rest. I need more sleep than Ron needs. I like to rest. I'm always joking how one of my favorite pastimes is power lying about. I feel like I'm not getting enough rest. And when I don't get enough rest, I'm not a happy camper. I've got that classic homeopathic phosphorus rubric, which is sleep is a tonic to phosphorus. Anything that's going wrong with me, if I could just sleep, it makes me feel better. So I've got that classic thing going on. Sleep is good. Sleep is very good. We like sleep. So part of how you stay, part of why people are the way they are, it's how they're wired. It's also how they digest and absorb. And there's a lot of individuality with respect to that. So it's kind of interesting. So, and like I said, most people are going to have trouble with fat loss, and fewer people, a much lower percentage of people, have trouble keeping weight on. And there are some biochemical reasons why that occurs. So what should you do about it? It depends on what's going on. If you're happy and healthy, then you don't have to do anything. And if you're slender and you're happy and healthy, just keep doing what you're doing. And if you're heavy and you're happy and healthy, just keep doing what you're doing. But if you don't absorb your essential fatty acids, your B vitamins, or your magnesium well, you're not going to be as happy. And if you don't eat them, now some people who are slender are unhappy because they're chronically trying to keep slender. That's another reason that there are people who might be heavy if they ate differently. And they may be chronically trying to keep themselves thin. And if that's what you're doing, you have a digestion and absorption system that works well, but you're choosing not to eat a lot of food. And you might be deficient in certain nutrients. And the biggies, essential fatty acids, B vitamins, and magnesium. So if you don't get those in, you're not going to be so happy.
No.
B6 makes you cheery because it helps to drive magnesium into your cells, and it also helps with serotonin metabolism. And if you have good serotonin metabolism, you're going to have less inflammation, you're going to have less pain, you're going to be happier. Because yesterday, I've got some water on the knee.
You got something on the knee.
Good old-fashioned term. Mm. Yeah, because I have water on the knee, and it's not painful. It's just swollen.
Puffy.
Right. Yeah. So I decided what I probably have is bursitis.
Okay.
And I got the bursitis from a combination of riding way too many miles last week. Mm-hmm. I rode, I did a metric on Saturday and then did 87 miles on Sunday and then did 40 miles on Saturday again, the following Saturday, with a few workouts in between. But I think the big catalyst that hampered that was is Bruno Mars. It was Bruno Mars.
Oh, it was Bruno Mars at the wedding.
Yep. Bruno Mars at the wedding
did not
help.
We went to the wedding and we did some dancing.
So Mazel Tov, Mariam. Tabrik, Mariam.
Yeah.
And David. So our beloved friends and you know, my coworker Mariam, and they had a wonderful wedding that we went to.
Yeah, it was fun.
And I was doing a little bit of dancing, and there's those beautiful Persian women with their gorgeous sequin dresses. Oh my goodness!
Oh my
God,
that was great.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and Fran was dancing. She was francing.
Well, oh my God! Oh,
I went there.
Boy, I can't even. I can't believe I'm 54 years old and I've never heard that before, because I have always been one to dance crazily and however I felt like, and that's brilliant.
It just spills out every once in a while. Something just spills out of the brain.
I was francing.
You were francing.
Fran dancing.
Yeah, Fran dancing.
Well, the portmanteau has become very, very popular in recent years.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was francing.
Francing.
Even and this does not mean I was speaking French. But,
No.
But
or that you were in France.
No, it means I was Fran dancing.
We were
portmanteauing Fran and dancing.
Well, you could have been doing the Frandango.
Oh, dear. But I was not. I was doing the Uptown Funk. So that's the thing. I was doing your basic dancing, but Uptown Funk is one of my favorite songs of all time, and it is a fantastic song to dance to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got my Bruno Mars on.
Did she ever.
And I honored, and then everybody made a circle around me.
Yeah, I know.
Because I went nuts.
You were performing for the crowd.
But
it was
Bruno,
very nice.
I love that song.
I know you do.
It's really great. That song, it was made to be. I would pay money to go to a workshop where somebody taught everyone a really fantastic routine to Uptown Funk, and then we did a flash mob.
Yeah.
But you know what I should do? I should make up the routine.
Maybe you should just make up the routine and do a flash mob. Get a bunch of people to do it.
A flash mob,
and we'll just go somewhere like where
where
everyone's like sad or whatever, and then just do a flash mob.
Or go to Third Thursday.
And cheer everybody up. Or we could do it at Third Thursday.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You just plop down a boombox type thing and turn it up and do it.
And do a flash mob.
Yeah.
And everybody would be happy.
No one's done a flash mob at
That's not true. They? Yes, they have.
Yeah, oh, they have.
Remember nice Heather Peck?
Hmm.
Back in the day when there was
the
that fit place
in
Willimantic.
Right. Sure.
She was teaching Zumba. She did one.
She did a flash mob there?
And I wasn't there, and
Neat
I would
idea.
Have enjoyed it. Yeah, flash mobs make people happy. I think that there should be flash mobs. But anyway, so I was talking about the water on the knee, and I was researching, is it possible to have painless water on the knee, which is what I have? And it's like, well, what I probably did to myself, because I'm not in pain. It's or not particularly in pain, but my knee feels tight, and it didn't take very long to get better either, with a few simple things. So if you have a swollen knee all of a sudden, but it's not red and it doesn't hurt that much, you might just have bursitis. You might have irritated the bursa, the sac around the joint. And that's what I thought maybe I had. So I went, maybe it's bursitis. So I immediately started to do a bunch of things. I don't know if I'm going to be able to squeeze in a nice acupuncture appointment, but if I could in the next couple of days, I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm loving my acupuncture. Shout out to Nicole. But that would be, if I could do that, I would. If I had the time, I would do that. Meanwhile, what I have done is, you know, I rested. I got called out by coach, who said you should get off your bike for a while, and I'm gonna mostly get off my bike. I went swimming. I'm gonna go swimming tomorrow because it didn't aggravate it, and I'm probably gonna ride today, but very easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to spin it out, and I'm gonna, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 miles. That's it, but slow and easy, just to spin it out, and then I will probably do the same on Friday, or maybe nothing on Friday, and then I'll do we'll see what ride I'll do on Saturday, because we're going to the Farm to Fork Pennsylvania Dutch. But, you know, I want to be nice to that knee. So I did that, and I have a nice menthol and CBD cream that I've been putting on regularly. I took high doses of curcumin. I have a nice curcumin supplement that I took like extra high doses of to help reduce the inflammation. I also applied a homeopathic gel that has a lot of things for tendons and ligaments. So I applied that, and that helped. But the big thing was, when I realized it was probably bursitis, one thing that I know helps bursitis is vitamin B6. So I looked on my shelf and I found some pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which is activated vitamin B6. And I took a relatively high dose of that. And by last night, the knee was significantly better, and today it's significantly better as well. And I even lifted weights today and did, you know, knee stabilization exercises, and I'm good. So remember that vitamin B6 for bursitis. But if you have a swollen knee and you're not sure what it is or why, you should get it checked out. You know, don't try to treat it yourself. Another thing I could do that's probably a good idea is we should tape that knee. So maybe we do that later.
Yeah, maybe you should do that.
Tape the knee. I think that'd be a good thing. Taping always works.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll tape my knee. That'd be a nice thing.
That works.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah. So I'll wear the tape. Probably should tape it before I ride even. That would be ideal.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you could do that.
So home things for if your knee is swollen but doesn't hurt. If you're not sure it is, it's a good idea to go to the doctor so somebody can make a call about it. But if you get diagnosed with bursitis, vitamin B6 is a very nice, helpful thing for bursitis. And then, of course, the curcumin and fish oil and magnesium and things like that. One of the things vitamin B6 does is it enhances magnesium absorption, so it's going to help to reduce your pain as well as manage your serotonin, which also is part of the pain pathway. So, you know, you wind up having less pain. But I definitely think the swelling has gone down because I'm finding I can bend the knee better. I can't bend it 100%. And then I was reading about what a Baker cyst is. And a Baker cyst is basically bursitis, but in the back of your knee. So if you have swelling in the back of your knee and it's sort of in one spot and it's not extremely painful, or it could be a little bit painful, it could be, again, bursitis in the back of the knee, and basic anti-inflammatories can help that. You keep looking like you want to say something.
Yeah. I have a couple of things that people called in on.
Oh, now that's all. 5 minutes left. Okay,
I know it's 5 minutes left, but we can address them both. We can definitely do that.
Okay, go for it.
So I'm gonna start with we got a call from Kevin from Chaplin, who loves the show, by the way.
Thank
said
you.
To say hi.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin wanted to, you know how you always say, you know, we talk about, well, what's the best sport to do?
Yeah.
And what do you always say?
The one you'll do.
The one you'll do. Well, Kevin wants to bring something up right now because it's very timely, and he wants to bring up soccer because it's World Cup time.
Yeah.
And he's a huge soccer fan, loves soccer.
Yeah.
And he said it's a lifelong sport, and the fitness of soccer players versus other sports. I mean, we could actually do a show on that, but and we may in the future. That's a possibility. But he's just a really, you know, a big soccer guy, and he did track and field before, and you know, he's done a bunch of things, but soccer is his thing. So anyway, he just wanted to shout out on the World Cup and soccer. And I also, I think I found something really cool here too. And also the Willington Ashford Mansfield United Soccer Club.
Oh.
Where you can get your kids involved in soccer.
Nice.
So there's soccer in our area here too, which is really cool. And their website is whamunited.com. So you can check that out. So soccer for life is what he said. He said soccer gets a bad rap here in the U.S., and he wishes it got a better rap because it is the most watched sport in the world.
Right.
Which is really, really cool.
More than bicycle racing?
And more participated in.
Oh.
I think also more participated in.
Than bicycle racing. Because you used to say that bicycle racing was
the Tour de France is the one, the spectacle one, that is the one thing that is watched more than any other sport because it involves 22 days and it's, you know, broadcast all over the world. Similar to World Cup, though. I mean, they're back and forth. They're real, real close to one another. Real close. But, yeah. Yep. So, anyway, shout out to Kevin from Chaplin, who lives right around the corner from us, actually.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, kind of cool. Anyway, and then the other thing is our friends in Tolland had a couple of questions. One was herbs to be used for kidney stones. Do you have some? Yeah,
what is
that?
Well, a big one would be chanca piedra, which means break a stone. There's an herb called
does. Oh,
yeah,
my
stone.
God.
So there's an herb called Stonebreaker.
Stonebreaker.
There's another herb you can use. It's water. Wait, water's not an herb, but water.
No.
So if you drink a gallon of water a day, you're going to be less likely to get kidney stones in the first place.
Drink lots of water.
And also if you take magnesium, especially magnesium citrate or citrate malate, the citrate helps it so that the calcium oxalate stones don't precipitate out in your urine as much. Now, there are many kinds of kidney stones, but the most common one is calcium oxalate stones. But you want to prevent them from precipitating. And a lot of people, if you have more inflammation in your body and if you eat more calcium relative to magnesium, which a lot of people do because they don't eat their green veggies, then you want to take magnesium. But that's a big problem. People have too much calcium because they have cream in their coffee and they have sandwiches, cereal for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, and pasta for dinner, and not enough green stuff.
Yep.
So they have excess calcium and not enough magnesium, so they're going to be more likely to get kidney stones. And you get kidney stones if you have more inflammation. But chanca piedra, and you know, there's a lot of things like marshmallow root and corn silk are going to soothe the urinary system to help ease gravel out. There's gravel root too. Colansonia is stone root. That's another herb, and then gravel root, which is Eupatorium purpureum, right?
Okay.
Yeah. There's two eupatoriums. There's gravel root. There's eupatorium perforatum and purpureum. So we need, and gravel root is, I think it's purpureum, but gravel root is sweet Joe pie weed or purple Joe pie. Now it's called eutrochium purpureum. I think it changed its name. That's interesting. Maybe they changed the name so people didn't confuse it with the other one, Boneset.
Mm.
And Boneset is Eupatorium purpuratum. Common Boneset. Yeah, they changed the name of Joe Pieweed to Eutrochium. Probably so it wouldn't get confused with, see how I confused it?
Yeah.
So that's why. So anyway, that's gravel root. That's another. So gravel root, which is also eupatorium, eutrochium purpureum. And stone root, which is colansonia, which is also really good for hemorrhoids. And the other one is chanca piedra. And chanca piedra is, it's pretty easy to. It's also known as Gale of the Wind, and it's a Philanthus niruri. But anyway, it's something you can get. But then drinking lots and lots of water, like people who have kidney stones or gout, we like to tell them to try to drink a gallon of water a day. We gotta go.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So save it for next
week.
Okay.
So I got another one. We'll save it for next week.
Yeah.
And we'll go there. Next week.
So you've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and you have been listening to Radio Naturopath. If you would like to listen to this show at another time, you can listen on at franstorchnd.com. You can also listen at my Facebook page at franstorchnd, as well as Twitter at the same handle at franstorchnd. I've got an Instagram account that you can get. You can see interesting stuff about my life and information, which is also at franstorchnd. We will be back in 2 weeks because next week is the 4th of July.
Right.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with more Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores.